Case number 07-1423, Brewers and Maltsters Local Union Number 6, affiliated with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, petitioner versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Martin for the petitioner, Ms. Burdick for the respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Art Martin, the lawyer for Local 6 of the Teamsters, Brewers and Maltsters, the petitioner in this case. And we are back again on a case that was before this court 2 years ago regarding the board's failure to give a remedy to an 8A5 violation involving a refusal to bargain in St. Louis at the company's brewery in St. Louis. The company had installed hidden cameras. Without bargaining with the union, a number of employees, as a direct result, and but for the installation of those hidden cameras, were observed in various stages of misconduct and disciplined as a result of that. The board in this court concluded that the employer, Anheuser-Busch, was guilty of violating the National Labor Relations Act by refusing to bargain with the union prior to the installation of the hidden surveillance. And it's been the union's position throughout that the proper way to remedy that violation is to put the union in the position it would have been but for the company's illegal conduct. That is, restore the status quo ante, reinstate those employees so that the union is in a position to deal with the employer on behalf of those employees as if the illegal conduct never happened. This court concluded that the board's original decision refusing to restore the status quo ante, refusing to reinstate the employees, was inconsistent with the board's established policies and practices.
Is it your position that the statute requires that?
My position is that the statute does require an affirmative remedy in this case, and that the affirmative remedy is the status quo, restoration of the status quo ante. The board's current interpretation of the statute, that it prohibits the status quo ante in this case, is without any basis in the law. 10C's.
Didn't the board say, even if it had discretion, that for various policy reasons it would reach the same result as an exercise of its discretion?
It says that, but it's exercise.
In other words, the board reasoned in the alternative there, I think.
Excuse me?
The board reasoned in the alternative. It seemed to suggest that the statute pointed in that direction. And then it said, as I read the order, even if the board had discretion under the statute for various policy reasons, it would reach the same result and deny make whole relief in a case like this.
They did say that, but the reasoning they rely on, Your Honor, is the Weingarten line of cases, the TerraCorp line of cases, and those cases are in opposite to the case at hand. Those cases involve the board's decision that employees ought to have the right to ask for and be provided union representation in the course of an investigatory situation. And then they have changed their position and originally ordered restoration of the status quo or reinstatement of back pay in those line of cases where the employees were refused an opportunity to have representation. And what the board decided was that they did not want that kind of a hidebound, or they did not want that kind of a restrictive limitation on the employer's investigatory operations, okay, that the employer should be able to engage in these interviews and not have these restrictions. If they didn't do it, that they would have to provide back pay and reinstatement. What they wanted to do was make the process more flexible. In the case of a violation of 8A5, where the union has been denied, where the company has refused to bargain in good faith with the union, just the opposite result is called for, and Fiber Board speaks to that. The way to protect, because what the complaint in the Weingarten cases is a squawk about the employee who may have engaged in some misconduct complaining about the investigatory process. The only party in this case that comes with clean hands is the union. the union is the agent of the employees, and to protect its status as the agent of employees in an 8A5 case, the employer must deal with the union first before installing the hidden cameras.
Well, you could have a union in a Weingarten case, too.
Well, the Weingarten cases aren't structured like that. The Weingarten rule is a section is deemed by the...
Suppose an employer refused to allow a union official to, in a unionized company, to represent an employee facing an adversary inquiry.
The union would complain about that.
And maybe an 8A5.
Well,
if the employee were fired because of theft, then what?
Well, that might be a different argument. But that's
same problem, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be, but it'd be a different situation.
It's a difference. It's a distinction without a difference.
I guess I would argue that that in that case the board would probably take the same position.
Right.
But in this case, the board has over for decades. Concluded that the appropriate remedy in an 8A5 case is to restore the status quo ante.
In our earlier opinion, we didn't say that 10C precluded the board's interpretation, did we?
What the court said is that the 10C did not prohibit or did not speak to whether.
So under Chevron, there was a gap to be filled, right?
Yes.
So I don't know. See why under either theory. The board can be sustained.
Well, under Chevron, we look at what the intention of 10C was. Since it's not spoken to in the first instance, we look at what 10C was about, this prohibition against reinstatement.
That's not right. We look at what the statute, what the intent is behind the statute, both at Chevron 1 and 2. The question of Chevron 2 is, if there's an ambiguity, is the agency's resolution of that reasonable? That's the question.
Yes, and I would suggest that it's not because the legislative history reflects that portion of 10C at issue was adopted by Congress to address those situations where employees were attempting to inoculate their bad behavior from
like
consequences.
That sounds like a Chevron 1 argument.
Well, I think Chevron...
Which this court already precluded in the first case, right?
I don't think so.
Because you just agreed with Judge Silberman when he asked you that this interpretation is at least permissible.
Well,
I mean, it's not bound. The statute doesn't resolve the question. You agreed with Judge Silberman on that, right?
Yes.
So we're at Chevron 2.
Well, so then it's whether or not the board's view is a reasoned approach, I guess I would say is what's required.
Permissible interpretation.
And I'd say
your argument that it's inconsistent with a broad purpose of the statute is exactly the same argument that this court used in the Chevron case itself, which the Supreme Court rebuked us for doing.
Well, in this case, the legislative history suggests that
there's a specific intent aren't you getting back to Judge Tatel's point? Are you now arguing it's a step one Chevron?
No, I think that the
legislative history specifically speaks to this question.
The legislative history speaks to the reason that this provision is in the statute.
It doesn't speak to the issue right before us.
It does not. So then the question becomes is whether or not this is a proper, reasonable.
We would necessarily pick on our own.
Yes, a reasonable remedy in this case. And what it does in this case is what the board argues is that this is a windfall to the employees. And so it's improper in this case. And it's not a windfall to the employees. It is a consequence of a restoration of the union status as a bargaining agent, as the 8A5 agent.
It's just like the debate over the exclusionary rule, though, and there are two legitimate, reasonable sides to that debate, and the board here chose one side.
Well, we're not arguing for an exclusionary rule. We're arguing for the only party that come to this court with clean hands is the union. The company's a bad actor, and the employees were goofing off. And so in order to restore the union's position as a bargaining agent, the status quo ante is required. Otherwise, you're just simply saying, it's just the cease and desist order is simply a restatement of the 885 statute. I had reserved a couple minutes.
Actually, it's better than that because it puts the company in a potential contempt proceeding if they don't comply with the order.
But the contempt proceeding requires clear and convincing. It increases the standard if that were to happen, but the company's already got what it wants in this
Most
case.
Most companies do not like to be in contempt.
Well, they've already got what they want. I mean, the windfall is to the company.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ruth Burdick, appearing for the National Labor Relations Board. Your Honors, it's very clear that we're at Chevron 2 upon remand. The court made that clear in its decision, and the board acknowledged it in its decision as it went ahead and looked at the policy concerns that would decide whether or not it would find make whole remedy in this case appropriate. The board found it was not based on policies, not only with regards to legislative history and the Weingarten discussion,
The board was saying that the statute compels this result, or that the statute gives the board discretion to choose a result?
The statute gives the board discretion to look at the question. If it was a matter of on its face, we would have been at Chevron 1 in the court.
The board's opinion seemed to be echoing Judge Sentell's dissent from.
Your Honor, frankly, the board went through probably a much longer discussion of its rationale preceding the policy discussion that was necessary. But it felt that it needed to fill out its rationale it previously given to the court. And the court found the rationale was, in particular, insufficient because the board had not adequately distinguished the two cases, Great Western and Tonko. The board proceeded to do that and also, on an independent ground, found that even if it was foreclosed. In this situation, it would, on basis of policy and independent of the Weingarten considerations or everything else it had discussed, it would find make whole remedy inappropriate on the facts of this case, not only for the windfall aspect, but also because the board found that actually, contrary to what we've just heard from Union Counsel, that the status quo ante had been restored.
Don't you think future employers will think they get one clear shot at doing something like this?
The board discusses this at the end of its decision when it discusses the fact that it has chosen not to import the exclusionary rule principle that has been pressed by the other side. And that the exclusionary principle is a situation where it's a constitutional principle for defendants' rights, and the purpose of it is to deter unlawful conduct. And the union has expressed the opinion that that's the sort of result it had wished the board had taken here. And the board found that it was absolutely not appropriate to introduce that principle, and to the extent that Great Western and Tonko relied on that kind of concept, it was overruling those cases. Because the deterrence factor was already dealt with by the board's remedy, which was not only the cease and desist order, but affirmative bargaining order for the union to bargain not only over future hidden surveillance cameras, but any mandatory term that was required to be bargained over. So under a situation like this, it's not really a free pass, as the union would have this court believe. A company or an employer engages in this sort of behavior, they will be found to have violated the act and all the consequences that come with that, including the litigation and the 10 years of delay, but in all the aspects. And here, not only will future bargaining over hidden cameras be something that specifically must be bargained over, but any mandatory subject. And if they do not, there will be a contempt proceeding.
The same argument could be made with respect to any time an employer or a union engages in a violation of 8A1 or 8B1, a threat against employees. It could be the response of which is for the board is a cease and desist order and a posting of notice. It could be argued that you get one bite at the apple in both of those situations, but the fact is you end up with a cease and desist order and a contempt proceeding if you do anything wrong again.
Yes.
Most unions and employers tend to regard that as unfavorable.
That's true. So it comes down to almost a cultural opinion that the board's remedies in general might be insufficient, and there is an argument for that among some in the industry. I did want to point out that the board addressed the status quo ante remedy in footnote 19, finding that, in fact, status quo in this sort of situation, status quo ante for the union itself, would have been restoration of the cease and desist organ, or cease and desist order, which restored the bargaining, the affirmative bargaining order to bargain in the future, and the post denotice. That was sufficient to return the union itself to status quo ante. And I do want to also just reiterate that even if the board had not gone through its 6 pages of rationale discussion, which it had presented the court and expanded that, on independent policy provisions and concerns, the board found that it would not have found to make Holt remedy appropriate in this case. And therefore, the board has fully and completely satisfied this prior court, the court's remand instructions in this case. And if there's no other further questions, the board asks that the court please affirm.
Thank you. Does counsel have any time left?
Yes, 1 second.
Okay. You can take your time.
I just would ask the court to consider what actually happened in this case. The union, at the time the union found out that the hidden surveillance was in place, it was over. It was done. There was nothing to bargain about. The union at that point had to make a decision about how to represent those employees. The law at the time was that the status quo ante was the proper remedy. Okay, so the union pursued arbitration on the one hand, the merits of the discharge, 3 arbitrations. But those arbitrators did not consider, or were not in a position to consider, and did not consider the propriety of the surveillance under the, and were not able to under the just cause standard because of the complaint pending with the labor board. The union relied on the fact that the board law at the time required status quo ante for refusal to bargain in this case. So the union pursued its remedies with the labor board.
And it could have actually brought the same argument before the arbitrator.
We did, and the arbitrator said we're not going to consider it because it's pending before the board. So there we are. We're looking for our remedy from the board, which we're entitled to, and then the board flips the law on us, just tosses it out the window,
agencies are entitled to do that.
They toss it out the window.
They should change position.
And they toss it out the window, though, based on a line of cases that are in opposite to this 8A5 cases
now,
on those wine court, the Terra Court cases.
They've now overruled those cases.
Is what?
They've now overruled those cases.
But in reliance on Terra Corp in those cases, which are in opposite to the 8A5 situation here.
You make a very clever argument with respect to those cases. But, counsel, I think it's rather labored.
I know you're...
Thank you. Case is submitted.